You're listening to The Mumcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. This week's comics, and in this week's spotlight, Nick talks about Beasts of Burden, animal rights. Around the mic tonight are...
Hello, I'm Nick.
Hello, I'm James.
Hello, I'm Jane.
Hello, I'm Nick. No, wait a minute, we did that bit already.
Hello, Jane and Nick.
How are you two? You good?
Yeah, good.
We are the Mumcast. I haven't quite worked out how to do this smoothly at the beginning yet, but we are the Mumcast. We will be talking about comics in probably... Experience shows us maybe about 15 or 20 minutes time.
Go make a cup of tea, run a bath,
yeah,
somewhere.
You can talk to us about comics or, you know, just anything if you want to by emailing us at
mumcast@gmail.com.
Or you can go to the site and look at or listen to all of our previous episodes. That is at
mumcomics.com.
Certainly it is. And you can talk to us on Twitter. I'm Nick Site.
I'm Jane Mom.
I'm James Mom.
And there's John Mom, but he's on holiday somewhere very hot at the moment.
Bermuda.
Yes. Bermuda, is that how you say it?
Bermuda.
Okay. And you can also follow the main Mom Comics Twitter account. That's Mom Comics. We are on Facebook and on Google+ and on Tumblr. You can see links to those in the top right-hand corner of the Mom Comics website. And you can leave comments on any of our posts on the website, but it's also apparently very helpful to us if you want to post a comment on iTunes or on your podcatcher of choice. And obviously you can subscribe to us on your podcatcher of choice. Like a well-oiled machine. So what have you two been up to this week?
Do machines get oiled that much? I mean, really, that's quite an old reference now, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe.
It's like a super cooled supercomputer with that special gel that insulates it.
You really want to discuss this while we're taping?
Okay. It just, you know, I think we need to workshop our cliches.
Okay. Yeah. You're just going to ignore the fact that I said taping.
You said taping.
That was clever.
I am.
Did you not get that? That was clever.
No, well, I'm old, so okay. To me this is taping.
Mm. So anyway, what have you two been up to? What have you been up to, James? I'm asking you first.
I haven't seen a doctor or nothing this week, which has been nice, so it's unusual. I'm probably not going to preoccupied with my garden like I was last week. I was listening back to the last week's show because I'm vain.
Okay.
And I was really going on about how much I'm enjoying the garden at the moment. It's quite embarrassing.
I think it's nice.
I like doing it, but, you know, I don't know about you guys. I've turned up here for comics, not listening to some middle-aged dude going on about his garden.
Wow, you're like, full deep into the self-loathing then.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. So I've done a lot of that this week. And I watched a film with a friend last night that was actually better than I thought it was going to be.
What was it? It was still crap.
It wasn't brilliant, but it was better than I thought it was going to be. It was Arthur, the Russell Brand
version. The remake.
It's not as dreadful as I thought it was going to be.
As far as I know, the original isn't. I mean, I haven't seen the original either.
Well, it's not, you know, it's not the greatest movie ever committed to celluloid. Yeah, that's another old reference for you.
Yeah, celluloid is what films used to be on before they were painted directly onto our imagination.
That's right.
By Dreamweavers.
But it was better than we thought it was going to be, though, didn't it, Janie? You didn't enjoy the female leads.
I had no preconception of the film other than it wasn't particularly good, and that remained throughout the film.
Okay.
The female lead gave a particularly wooden performance, as did Russell Brand.
Okay.
I thought, actually, there was a lot of charm in Brand's I thought there was a lot of charm in Brand. You can tell I can't multitask, can't you?
You really can't.
I thought Brown was charming. I thought Greta Gerwig was charming, who was played opposite him. I felt like Helen Mirren brought a lot of pathos.
Helen Mirren's in it.
Yeah.
She literally will like take any role, won't she?
Jennifer Garner made a good villain. And I thought that Nick Nolte did a really, really good job confusing me and making me think that he's Ron Perlman.
Are all these people really in this film?
Yeah, it was embarrassing.
Not a bad cast.
It was about halfway through it, and I said to Jane, "Is that Ron Perlman?" She went, "James, oh James," she said, "you fucking idiot." She punched me in the face, and quite rightly, and then she said, "It's Nick Nolte. You know it's Nick Nolte. You're an idiot."
And then for the rest of the evening, he had to watch images of Ron Perlman just so he knew what he looked like.
Yeah, but dressed as Hellboy.
He's very old now.
Well, aren't we all?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a bit older than us, but that's besides the point. He was the Beast in Beauty and the Beast.
That's true. I also had a thought this week. I was walking the dogs.
Just the one?
Yeah.
Very specifically. You can remember it because...
Yeah, because it's the only thought I've had this week. I was walking the dogs, and I was thinking about Star Trek, and I was thinking about the Borg in particular, and it seems to me that the Borg are like the ultimate libertarian parable. They are... The Borg are an example of collectivism gone mad.
Mm.
So I no longer trust the next generation because I think it's written from a libertarian political bias.
You'd think that?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Because of the Borg.
That's why.
I'm a socialist. I'd be part of the Borg.
The Klingons were kind of supposed to be old Russia, weren't they?
Yeah. Well, that's the... Certainly in the Undiscovered Country, which is, what, that's six, isn't it?
Yeah. Seven. You would be part of the Borg, though.
Yeah, I would, because I'm quite left.
Yeah.
I'm a Clause 4 Borg.
Clause 4 Borg?
I'm a Clause 4 Borg.
You'd look pretty awesome with all the black leather, though, and the little bits of the modelling kit stuff stuck onto you.
Yeah, your unique train system and tax money now belong to us. Assimilate. That's what I'd say.
They're not Daleks.
I don't think they
just repeat assimilate over and over, do they?
Assimilate, and then they put their little worm fingers in your neck.
Oh, yeah, they do that, don't
worm
they?
Worm fingers in your neck.
It's been so long since I saw real pictures of the real Borg that now I only really know them from all of the weird Star Trek Doctor Who crossover pictures I seem to have seen on the internet. So I get them mixed up with Cybermen and stuff. It's a little bit confusing.
I call them the worm-fingered socialist bastards.
The worm-fingered socialist computer network bastards.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. So you watched that film. Did you do anything else?
I watched Tinkerbell and the Secret of the Wings.
Oh, cool, okay.
That's quite charming.
Oh, well, is it presumably it was Marvel, Disney, wasn't it?
Disney, yeah.
So you can get a sense of what the Star Wars films are going to be like.
Well, no, you can get a sense of what the Star Wars films are going to be like by watching the new Star Trek film, because much as I love Star Wars, the new Star Trek franchise is not Star Trek. There's none of the brains behind the concepts. They're just action films. There's no, Roddenberry had a vision of the future that I do not feel is carried forward in Abraham's reimagining of the universe.
Abrams?
Yeah.
Okay.
Father Abrams. I don't know how he has time, frankly, to manage a directing career and look after the Smurfs.
Do you think... How long were you having to cycle then to try and remember who Father Abraham was? Did you get it straight away? That's
amazing. No, because I can picture him on the front of a long player record. Father Abraham, it had a red border, and then there was a photograph in the middle with Father Abraham with his big white beard surrounded by Smurfs.
Do you think that he was behind them taking the show on the road as the Blue Man Group?
Or yeah, possibly.
Do you think that was his idea?
I think it's probably just as well he's passed as well, because he was a celebrity in the 70s.
Oh, no, that's true.
Hanging around with little blue dudes.
That's true. Okay, so Tinkerbell Arthur, and you didn't go to the doctor, and for some reason you hate yourself for being interested in gardening.
We let Jane down on Saturday as well. She came round on Saturday to join us, and I promised her, and I promised the listener, and I'm sorry, listener, I promised everyone that we'd watch The Hobbit, but Nikki and I, our lives got so chaotic, we failed completely. And I'd like to say now to Jane, I'm sorry.
So now we're talking about things you didn't do this week as well.
That list could go on forever. Yeah,
we watched Brave as well, didn't we?
Brave by default.
I like Brave. I like the little bears in Brave.
What did you? He's nice.
And all the Scottish people.
What did you think of Brave, Jane? Segueing into what you did this week.
Brave was a very good film. I enjoyed all the performances, and it was pretty.
Excellent. What else did you do this week?
I like the lead character. She's lovely.
She was lovely. Brave was on. It wasn't a choice of film. It was just on, and nobody was watching it apart from me. So, and I enjoyed it, so that was good. Yes, this week has been a really busy week for me, but I did win some sweets on Tuesday afternoon.
I hope you declared those.
It's not ironic, I guess, but I'd gone in the shop to buy sweets and then ended up winning more sweets.
All right, okay.
That's a coincidence.
It is. Unless you won the sweets by entering into a competition that you entered into by buying the sweets, in which case you
pretty
couldn't
much.
Possibly have won the sweets.
Well,
unless you'd bought the sweets.
There's a way to work out if it's ironic. Okay, let's try it. It's like sweets when you've already bought some.
No, it doesn't work.
So it is ironic if it doesn't work.
No.
Because the song isn't ironic.
Yeah, but that just because she was so wrong about so much stuff, it doesn't mean that everything that doesn't fit in that song is ironic.
Anywho.
Also, splitting headache and Auschwitz.
Yes, that happened to me today, yes.
She's right in a way as well. I did.
Yeah.
Really, James?
Yeah, I wasn't exaggerating either. Yes, it's been a particularly testing day. And yesterday I didn't have lunch until 5:20. So essentially I didn't eat any food for the whole day.
Well, it's a wimps anyway, isn't it?
Apparently, but my body might disagree with that. I did, however, have a really nice chocolate fudge Kit Kat. I can't tell you what it tasted like. I ate so quickly when I got home because I was that hungry.
How did it feel though?
Empty,
yeah, fair enough.
Yes.
Well, that's okay because if you don't really appreciate it, the calories don't count, as I understand it.
If that was true, I'd be so thin.
But this weekend, I popped my eBay cherry and actually put some things on there to sale.
Okay, so you're no longer an eBay virgin.
Yes.
Okay, right.
Why did you whisper?
Just... because it entertained me to do so.
Okay. It was a very new experience and I was a bit fretting about it that I'd got something wrong, but it's all on there. People are bidding on stuff, so hey, that's good.
What's your highest rated item? The one that's doing the best?
Oh, they're all at 99p, but they've got 4 days left on it, 3 or 4 days. So I think, from what I understand, it will not get more interesting until Saturday, Sunday.
When it gets really hectic.
How can people find your stuff if they want to buy things that you've touched and worn?
That's a bit weird.
Oh, you're selling clothes?
Yeah.
Yeah, why on earth would you tell people where they can find things that they could buy from you? That would be weird. How dreadful.
I don't think listener would be interested in it, really.
Drop me a DM, I'll tell you.
I think you should let listener be the judge.
Is it because you've used your real name? You haven't used, like, Jane123 or something?
I can't remember. I don't know. I think my name comes up on there.
We'll put Jane's eBay, a link to Jane's eBay stuff on the show notes.
Okay.
Okay.
You don't have to buy anything, though, listener.
I think they understand that. It's okay.
I know, but I feel a bit weird. They're going to look at stuff and go, oh, she bought that. But to be fair, I'm selling it, so...
But there's some comics there as well, aren't there?
No, not yet.
All right, there will be, though. Keep an eye on Jane's store.
Oh, yeah, there'll be lots of comics going up soon. This is my trial run, which I was told that clothes and jewellery will do quite well. So that's what I've started with.
I think it depends on the clothes or jewellery. If they're clothes that you're ashamed of to the extent that you're telling people, don't go and look at them.
Well, no, I'm not ashamed of them, but 2 of them I've never even worn. They've still got tags on. Right. So.
Jane, can I ask you a question? Any of the clothes, have you worn them directly against your skin?
Yes.
All right, I'll be bidding.
You have her round at your house every week.
Yeah.
Several times.
Yeah.
So if you wanted it to touch her, you probably, in
he's
a
got a no direct
way,
skin on skin policy.
That's his?
Yes.
Because he touches me all the
time. Oh, no,
time.
It's only with me.
That's weird. Why? What's wrong with Jane?
I'm just worried that my musk would overwhelm her.
Well, you've never been worried about your musk overwhelming me.
Yeah, I know, but I know...
And it does.
Yeah, but I'm not worried about... I don't want to ruin my friendship with Jane, but yeah, I'm not so bothered.
Okay, no, that seems fair.
Moving swiftly on, one last thing I have done this week. I have now finished series 4 of Lost, so in the last 2 weeks I have got through 4 series of Lost.
Okay. It's a shame the writers didn't, innit?
No. Series 4 did jump the shark quite a lot for me, so...
I really don't agree or take or like that term, but that's okay.
Oh, okay. Series 4 has kind of lost it a bit for me, no pun intended. Or is it? So it'll be interesting to see what Series 5 and 6 bring.
When you say interesting?
I think what's quite good with television now in general is that at the point when it stops being rewarding for people, they carry on watching hours of it.
I was just going to say, it won't be interesting, it'll be perseverance because I need to complete it.
You don't have to.
I have to.
Why?
Because... I should. I like Sawyer. He's my favourite character. So I want to see what happens to him.
Okay. That seems fair. Did anything else happen this week?
I think that's it. Yes.
Okay. I had quite a fun weekend that ended in pain, which was a little bit annoying. Apparently it wasn't. I mean, I had a pretty bad headache. But it was okay. We started watching this program called Banshee, which is really good. I like it a lot. It's very violent and has sex in it a lot.
That's a theme of your program viewing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Especially, like, there's lots of murder generally in programs we watch. But I prefer when things are violent, but they're actually violent. I don't like when things are they have dead bodies in, but you don't. The violence is abstract, because I think that's kind of a little bit weird. I think if we are becoming desensitized to violence because of films and television, it's not because there are bad things happening in things, it's because we're quite often just seeing dead bodies and they turn up and people get shot and there's no blood and it's all really harmless and it doesn't matter. Anyway, that's besides the point. So Banshee is very good. Although Michael Georgiou doesn't agree.
Well, he's wrong then, isn't he?
From my perspective, he's wrong. Oh. From his perspective, he's right. That's perspectives are weird, aren't
they? His perspective do we trust?
Mike's.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I can see why that'd be the case.
I'm an actual coward, so I'm going to sit on the fence.
But there's more people on Mike's side now, so...
I tell you what, my arse is going to end up so splintered by the end of this podcast that I won't be able to sit down for...
You can go on the other side of the fence, it's fine. I'm contrary. And that happens even if I stated my opinion before anybody else did, apparently. We went and watched Iron Man 3, and it was awesome.
I've heard nothing but good things about that film.
Well, that's confusing then. We'll have to wait and see what Mike says, because I thought it was awesome.
No, everyone has said it's really good, better than the first one, even.
It's way better than the first one. It makes... Between and that
better than Avengers.
Yeah, between that and Avengers, they've basically made all of the other superhero films of the last few years just look a bit like amateurish.
Well, between you're making it sound like the best film ever.
No, I don't think it's the best film ever. It's as good as any other Shane Black written and directed action movies, and he is one of the best action writer directors. So he did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Not seen that.
And he did The Last Boy Scout. No, he wrote The Last Boy Scout, which was my favourite Tony Scott film.
Yeah.
And my favourite Bruce Willis film.
What's he done that I've seen?
I don't know.
He's done the Tinkerbell films.
I'm going to do an IMDb search specifically for films that an idiot might have seen.
Really?
I'm not going to do that.
I'd like to see what it comes back at.
Just a picture of your face.
Just a webcam of your face.
Crying,
yeah,
with ketchup on it.
You'd be amazed at how quietly someone can cry.
Yeah,
on the inside.
And that was it, really. That was my week. It was all very exciting. We saw some friends at the weekend, and that was nice. It's good. Shall we talk about this week's comics?
Yeah, we can do that. You can go first because you're spotlighting.
Huzzah! I'll go first because I'm spotlighting. Right. Okay. First things first. Hawkeye number 10. It's not exactly a jumping on point, to be honest, but it's worth mentioning because it continues to be as excellent as any of the other Matt Fraction written Hawkeye issues. But this issue is has art by Francesco Francavilla as guest artist, and it looks really different from the previous issues, but it's just gorgeous. It's kind of interesting because it jumps around in time quite a lot. It jumps around on its own timeline quite a lot. We're finding out about a whole new character, and it's a whole new bad guy, and it's quite interesting. He's got a really interesting backstory. I wanted to mention it, A, because of Francavilla's art, but B, because it's just always worth mentioning how much better I think Matt Fraction is at the moment than... He's always been a really good technical writer, but there's so much heart in the comics that he's writing at the moment. This and the two Fantastic Four books, they're just lovely. He's lovely. I love him. Nice. I don't know if I love him. So I mean, he seems nice, but I love his writing. Snapshot number 4, $2.99 from Image. Obviously, well, not obviously, but it's the last issue of this 4-issue run. And it's written by Andy Diggle with art by Jock. And this has been a really fun might be the wrong word, but it's been a real romp. It's quite a cool, a little bit espionage-y, little bit thrillery action comic. And it's been really good. There've been twists. There've been a couple of turns as well. The one thing about this that I thought, and I had a bit of a discussion with our friend James at FP about the other day, is I think this would work much better as a decent sized graphic novel than it does as a 4-issue series. Each issue doesn't really have enough bite to it.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. I've enjoyed it too, but given that it will almost certainly come out now, I think, as a collected edition, will be much more satisfying in a single sitting than it was as a serialised. I think because it's quite... there's a lot of action, but it still is relatively subtle. He's not sort of building up to sort of cliffhangers at the end of each episode, yeah. So it sort of flows quite neatly, but it sort of didn't feel as though it was... Yeah, it feels like it would be more satisfying as a single serving, rather than sort of little bites.
Definitely, because at the end of each issue, you don't really feel like you've had necessarily enough of it.
Yeah.
But it's a $2.99 comic. It's pretty good value for money. Jock's artwork is lovely, as always, really bold and exciting. And when he's working with Jock, Andy Diggle's writing just comes alive. It just flows so nicely.
I thought, given the main characters were in the situation they find themselves in, the fact that it's monochrome, it's just black and white, and there's a lot of spaces he leaves. You know, he's not afraid to leave a lot of white. And it kind of added to that sense of sort of a fish out completely out of water and out of their own depth. It really added to the storytelling.
Yeah, there's a lot of desperation in this issue. Yeah. X-Men Legacy number 10. It's the start of a new arc. In this, a new arc called Invasive Exotic, it was called. It's written by Simon Spurrier with art by Paul Davidson, the traditionally wonderful cover by Mike Del Mundo. All of his covers have been amazing for this book so far. It's $2.99 as well, so it's one of Marvel's better priced comics. And it's lovely. It continues to be the story of David Haller, the son of the now dead Professor Xavier, as he struggles with his mutant powers, which make him basically the most dangerous, potentially the most dangerous mutant or person on the planet. There's his powers are all locked up in these multiple personalities he's got that he visualizes in his head as being in a kind of prison, and he taps into the powers, but this arc starts continuing the situation that he's been in, which is that that there's something in his head with the other personalities that's creeping around, causing problems for him, making it very difficult for him to control the other personalities because they're all more scared of this creeping invader than they are of him. And it's unclear exactly who or what this personality is, but it wears the face of Professor X. But what this story also introduces is this idea that I think has been in the issues previously, but it brings to the fore this idea that there's this prophecy in which Hela destroys the planet and everyone on it. And
that's not that. You don't want that.
You don't want that, no. And he's got a conscience, obviously. He doesn't like that very much. It also continues to star as a kind of a quite peculiar. They've got this weird romance going on. The young X-Man Blindfold, who is very, very sweet, and who kind of meets with him because the X-Men are after David. And so she kind of meets him in idea space kind of thing, as she astrally projects sort of to meet him. They had a falling out in the previous issue. This issue sort of opens with her keeping an eye on him. But what's interesting about this, it introduces two really cool ideas. And one is it kind of visualizes what time is like, how it flows, but in a really interesting way. And it also introduces a character who's kind of, there's been this group of humans who want rid of mutants in the background throughout this run of X-Men Legacy, but it really brings them to the fore in this issue. I'm trying to find the name of the guy. Basically, David decides he's going to confront this issue of these humans, these anti-mutant humans, head on. And so he goes to meet the founder of this group. They're called the Darwin's Martyrs, who is a guy called Mr. Marcus Glove, who's this chap in a wheelchair with pretty much all of his limbs have been removed. He's missing an eye. He's deformed. And I've seen Simon Spurrier talking about this issue and what the proposition is in this issue, which is essentially what happens when your main superhero, when your main character, your hero, meets the villain, and the villain literally is just a perfectly rational person who is just wants to talk, really, and is reasonable and doesn't appear to be malicious at all. It's really interesting. It's a really, really good issue. Well worth picking up this comic from this point if you haven't read the previous ones. You should try and get hold of, I guess there's probably a trade of the previous issues, but this is a great place to start. Really, really good. And Paul Davidson's art is great. I've had a kind of a love, not been that bothered by relationship with the art in X-Men Legacy. But when they really hit it, they really hit it. Paul Davidson's art on this is great. Hopefully he'll be around for this whole arc as well, because it's really nice to see his stuff in this issue. Finally this week, I wanted to talk about Superior Spider-Man number 9. There's not an awful lot we can... I know James read this as well. It's $3.99. There's not an awful lot we can say about it, to be honest.
Very little.
It's written by Dan Slott, with art by Ryan Stegman and colour by Edgar Delgado. It's the second part of a story called Troubled Mind. And I think we might have talked a little bit about the previous issue. Basically, the ghostly Peter Parker that is in... Spider-Man, Dr. Octopus's head, kind of overplayed their hand in the last couple of issues, and now Otto Octavius is aware of him and is trying to do something about him. It's got a great cover, which actually relates to what goes on in the issue, which doesn't always happen in comics these days, but it's also a kind of a mental cover as well. It's... Although this didn't get spoiled for me on the internet at all, unfortunately the response to it on the internet kind of suggests to you what might happen in it. So try and avoid any of the online response to this. But it involves a big battle between baddies and goodies, and it has a pretty amazing conclusion which has upset people a bit. Like every other issue of Superior Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man that Dan Slott's ever written.
It just makes me... The, you know he knows what he's doing because he keeps upping the ante, and it's really... I'm surprised I'm a Spider-Man fan, which I wasn't sure I'd ever really be, but I... I'm a Dan Slott's Spider-Man fan.
Dan Slott knows what he's doing.
Oh, big time.
But rather unusually for... a comic, I guess, we don't have a clue what he's doing.
No, it's brilliant.
Genuinely don't know what he's going to do next. Although, I say that, but that's kind of how a lot of the Marvel books I'm reading at the moment feel. They're all kind of crazy, and even though at the end of the notional day, the status quo is always going to reset because these are soap opera comics, I'm not just talking about Spider-Man, I'm talking about all of them. The thing that's great about Marvel is they don't seem to be worried about shaking things up in the meantime. In the way that sometimes is really sort of smart and crazy. I mean, Hawkeye does not feel like a mainstream comic. X-Men Legacy is pretty weird for an X book. Lots of really high concept metaphysical stuff going on in there, and Superior Spider-Man is just crazy. Daredevil, probably the most touching thing about Daredevil at the moment is the relationship between two like grown men.
Yeah,
the long friendship between two grown men, and that's not what we've come to expect from mainstream comics, really. I don't think. Anyway,
that is some really thoughtful, intelligent stuff happening specifically at Marvel, isn't it?
Oh, but I mean, I'm sure DC's fine.
No, I'm reading plenty of DC books that I'm enjoying, but yeah, I think Marvel are producing slightly more consistently thoughtful work.
It's okay, though, because the DC books, at the very least, are new, and that's what's important.
Well, that's true. Although I've got two very, very good ones to talk about later.
Let's talk about your comics, James.
Okay, first up is the final issue of Dan the Unharmable by David Lapham and Rafael Ortiz. It is the story, as I've spoken about before, of this dude-like character who is, as the title might suggest, completely unharmable, lost his memory, and sort of stumbled into meeting this young girl that claims she's his daughter. So he's followed them on, basically becomes their de facto father of this sort of ragtag group because she's got siblings with her, which has led him a little bit down the rabbit hole in terms of this very dark world that they come from. Her mother came from a world of very abusive, from a very abusive cult, which has kind of left a very damaged elder daughter behind her, who really just wants to find out who she is and who her father is. And in this final issue, we have all of those questions answered. Not fully. There's a little bit of footwork for your brain to do at the end, but I think every good story should leave you with a few unanswered questions. It's more, it seems to me, I'm going to use the word parable again for the second time in this podcast. Mm-hmm. That's good. But a kind of parable about what too much power and... too much, the quest for too much knowledge, maybe, can do, and ultimately, greed in all its forms can be quite damaging. I didn't necessarily see where the book was going until the final few pages, but I really enjoyed it. It's rude, it's irreverent, downright mucky at times. But it was really well written, beautifully drawn, and I really enjoyed it. It's if you're prepared for some slightly inappropriate humour and some boobies in your comics, then you'll enjoy Dan the Unharmable very much. But it is at its heart, I think, quite a thoughtful story. If on its surface, it maybe doesn't always appear to be so. It's good.
Who knew Avatar would be bringing out so many good books at the moment?
Yeah, I love it. It's really, really good. I mean, it is an Avatar book, very much so. Second up is issue number one of Gail Simone and Freddie Williams II's The Movement, which is from DC, the New 52. It says, no longer outcasts, no longer misfits, they are the movement. And it's about a disparate band of superpowered teens that have basically taken over a rather rundown Coral City after some rather mysterious events have gone on. There's a really nice opening here with frames the superhero team very nicely, but also gives you a really quick insight into the level of corruption within the police force in this city, where there's two policemen basically arresting this sort of this kid who, you know, he looks like he's got a dime bag on him, and they're taking off him. Basically, the police suggest to him that they'll let him go if they can have a little look at his girlfriend. And the members of the movement have basically recorded this and start playing this message back to the police and tormenting
them. It's Sting.
It is, basically, yeah. They've been set up for a fall. But we also see that the police commissioner is a sort of Jim Gordon analogue sort of here that that's called, what's he called? Yee, I think.
Yee. First or surname?
Surname. I think so. I think that's his name. One of them's called Yee, and I'm pretty sure that's him. And basically, their worlds, this police commissioner and the movement, their worlds converge when they try and take down this rather disturbed, super-powered young man who's in a church who apparently is responsible for a few misdemeanors, murders, as I like to call them, potentially. It's really good. It's really interesting. It feels like it's taken its cues from recent events with, you know, the mass popular movements, you know, Uncut and
Anonymous,
and
Occupy,
and that sort of Occupy. That's it. That's the one I was searching for. You can see where the cues are, but it could be a bit stale. It could be a bit boring. You know, it's not, because Gail Simone's writing it, and she's got really zippy, intelligent, snappy dialogue. The characters feel quite well formed, even though there's quite a big team to introduce quite quickly. You get quite a good idea of, you know, who they are. There's an awful lot of, I'm here and this is who I am. But that never felt hack in the story. It always flowed beautifully, felt very natural. I really enjoyed it. To be honest with you, I wanted to pick it up and read it, because I'm not reading any Gail Simone books at the moment, and I think Gail Simone is awesome. So, and I'm very happy that the book is very good as well.
You followed the writer.
I did follow the writer, yeah, absolutely. Cool. I wouldn't have picked it up if it hadn't had Gail Simone's name on there. The final book is Batman Detective Comics number 20, $3.99, although there's lots of value. And that's by John Layman and Jason Fabok. And it's the Emperor Penguin Unchanged. Emperor Penguin. It's not the Penguin. It's Ogilvy, his ex-sidekick, who's basically ousted Cobblepot, taken over his empire, and basically goads Batman into coming to take him down, which Batman does, underestimates him, because it turns out him and Langstrom, he's had some of the Man-Bat serum from Langstrom, rather mutated it. It's an end of an arc, so there's a battle and a conclusion to that battle. It's Batman Detective Comics. I don't think you have to be the world's greatest detective to work out how the battle turns out.
That was fucking good.
Thank you.
You should be proud of that.
Thank you. I am. Yeah, I'm gonna put my hat on that. But for all that, it worked really well. I dropped Detective Comics for a little bit. Picked it up when John Layman started writing it. Liked it, but didn't really know where he's going. Really enjoyed the conclusion to this arc a great deal, and it seems quite clear that the Emperor Penguin really has slightly changed by the end of this, and he's kind of basically set up a new member of Batman's rogues gallery. You know, he's turned into something that I didn't see where it was going to go, even though I was going to use the phrase cookie cutter, which is so unfair, but it is kind of. It sticks to the Batman Detective Comics formula.
Familiar Rogues Gallery member and...
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah, but a new Rogues Gallery, but, you know, a mystery to solve, a villain behind it, and a takedown at the end. You know, that's how it works. But it set up a new member of the Rogues Gallery. It was very satisfying for that. John Layman writes a very good Batman book. I enjoyed it a great deal.
Good.
Yes. This week I picked up issue 20 of Animal Man. When I say this week I picked up issue 20 of Animal Man, this week I only had issue 20 of Animal Man.
Was that all that was in your standing order?
Yes. Saga's on a hiatus, as is American Vampire. So I don't know if this is the week I would have picked those up. I can't remember. Oh, and I dropped Action Comics ages ago, and that came up with this as well. So, yeah, the only comic I had. Luckily, it was good, so I'm going to talk about it.
Okay, good.
It's written by Jeff Lemire, with the first 18 pages being, I guess, pencilled and inked, as he is described as an artist, by John Paul Leon. And on page 19 and 20, the penciler is Timothy Green II, and the inker is Joseph Silver.
Yeah.
This sees Buddy Baker's film. So,
all right, which predates the actual comic, doesn't it?
I think it wasn't out before. There's a mention about it at the beginning of the first arc, and then there isn't
first
really
issue.
Yes, yeah. and then there isn't much after that. That's spoken about. Obviously, the whole Rot World has finished now. Buddy Baker's had some tragedy in his life, and things have gone for a turn for the worse. This issue opens, it's just the film. It's the film for the first 18 pages, following his life, which obviously echoes the loneliness and the remorse he's feeling at the moment, because there's his sons in the film, and, well, portrayed in the film, and there's other things going on which are kind of repeating themselves now. So he's in a bit of a desperate state. The film, I really love the fact they used a different artist for the film, and then they used different artists for the reality part, and it also brought back the fact that Buddy Baker wasn't just the superhero in Rot World. You know, that was completely separate. There is a real world in his universe, and he is a star.
Yeah.
And his film is out, so he's got to deal with that as well. Obviously, the film is making him very upset, and it's bringing back feelings and memories, and he still needs to get over a lot of things. He's on his own and in not a very good state. It's a filler issue in a sense that something big has just happened and we're waiting for what's going to happen next. There's still a lot more to come with his daughter Maxine and the Red. Obviously, she's the avatar of the Red. Buddy Baker renounced his Animal Man status, doesn't want to have anything to do with it because obviously it was resulting in death of his son and putting his wife and daughter and family in immediate danger. He has a lot to deal with, and now he has some real world things to deal with that aren't going to go away, and they won't understand what else has happened to him as fully as they should do, because they weren't aware of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens next. Animal Man is a book that I peak and trough with.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good when you read it in bulk. So if you save up a couple of issues, it's a really great story. But month by month, it can be incredibly decompressed and quite hard to sort of keep your momentum going with it, to keep your interest with it. It is brilliantly written, and the art has been absolutely fantastic. I've really enjoyed it. And Animal Man was one of the 52 that I picked up on a whim. I didn't really think I was going to enjoy it as much as I have done. But I did read the first two arcs in bulk.
Mm-hmm.
So from going from that and then reading it month on month has been a bit of a struggle. I want to see what happens next, and I will continue picking it up because it is really, really good. The cover is really, really, I really like the cover. I'll just get his name. Jay Lee? Yes.
Oh, he's good.
With art, with the colouring done by June Chung. So it's a really good cover and echoes the film parody that's going on at the moment.
Has WTF has finished, hasn't it?
They don't have fold-out covers.
Yeah,
no, that's finished.
And is that would that work as a self-contained book if you weren't already reading the comic?
Probably not.
Oh.
But it's it's a filler issue. So the next issue will be the new arc. So that should hopefully be a jumping on point. I won't know until I read it, obviously, but it is the placeholder book. And it's also a nice jump into the fact that there are other things going on in Buddy's life, mm-hmm. which are huge. And it's not just a day job or an alias or, you know, trying to cover something else up. It's like he is in the public eye in a very different way. And he has to deal with that. He can't ignore it. It's going to happen to him, basically. Yeah, it is. I am enjoying it. It's just there are a few ums about it at the moment. Which is, it's in a sense, I wouldn't drop it completely. I'd pick up and trade, for sure. But it's just, it's a bit like, I want more.
You're not sure if it works as a monthly book for you necessarily.
It is only a $2.99 book as well. So they haven't jacked up the price in that, which, you know, it wouldn't have surprised me if they had. It is a really good book and it is quite popular. So I'm pleased that it is good value for money.
I do like John Paul Leon's art anyway, so.
Yes, yeah, no, the art. No, it is a very nice book. And that's it.
Timothy Swan, Timothy Swan, he'll break your arm, he'll break your arm, with his bloody great wings.
That's right, it's me, Timothy Swan. In listening terms of the Momcast for me, it's January. I think Christmas has just happened. I mean, having time for listening to things is tricky. My own podcast, Psychomedia, currently has gone fortnightly, so that does mean there's plenty of time to get up to date. I'm trying on... Momcast, we'll have to see how it goes. You know, you can catch up with Psychomedia if you want to, if you like jokes. Anyway, I suddenly had one of those thoughts or memories that come to you from time to time, that the last time I'd searched for the comic I'm going to tell you about, I couldn't find a trace of it. Maybe Google's got better, or maybe I'm not very clever and suddenly figured out what I was supposed to be looking for. It might actually be the first comic I read online, and as with so many things, a high school friend, always the same one in fact, opened my eyes to a whole new world, not like that, of culture. Honestly, you guys, come on. This comic is officially called Anesthetics by Don Hertzfeldt, but I think of it as Bobby Neurotic. There are literally two, I couldn't believe it. I thought there was three, two Bobby Neurotic comics within Anesthetics. And yet somehow the way that they convey obsessive-compulsive disorder via black humour, it's so striking that they've stuck with me for years and years. So they visualise the condition as a little smiley face in the back of Bobby's head that's telling him all the things that are wrong with him and that he's doing wrong and that he has to do to try and fix it, juxtaposed with an old-style narrator at the start saying, "Hey kids, time for some more fun with OCD, it's Bobby Neurotic!" But don't worry. Other recurring characters like Bill do also face tragedy and social exclusion. The constant positivity of the narration is used to contrast the bad situations of the characters. Art-wise, it's a very simple, doodly affair, but even with such simple drawings, one gets a sense of the tension mound up in the characters. The comic is in black and white unless there's blood. Blood gets to be red, and all of it is in this very dark, macabre world that's... I don't know if it makes you laugh. Maybe, perhaps, a person who likes darker comedy would laugh at it. But it does unbalance you and unsettle you in a kind of in a positive way, really. That it brings some of this through by taking a sort of jokey tone with it instead of obviously just being quite down. So yes, that's what I wanted to tell you exists, essentially. A very short series from the past by someone who isn't really a comicer. Actually, they're a filmmaker, but nevertheless one that's been formative in my reading of comics and my awareness of how one can address dark issues informatively with simple visual flair. Anyway, I'll get the team, and by which I mean Nick, to put the link in the show notes. You can have a look yourself and, you know, get a sense of these comics that... just happened to be, I have no idea how my friend found them, be part of my comics experience growing up. Until next time, you should definitely, you know, pick up the subliminal messages, the kind of passive-aggressive way of me saying that you should listen to Psychomedia. If you don't, we're still out there fortnightly at the minute, recording jokes about science and stuff. And until I'm next on here in 20 weeks' time or something ridiculous like that... happy Momcasting.
Did anything happen in comics this week?
Yes.
Yeah, Rob Liefeld.
No!
Did anything happen in comics this week that isn't about Rob Liefeld?
Yes. AOL pulled the plug on Comics Alliance.
Did you know that AOL owned Comics Alliance? I didn't know that.
No.
I didn't know AOL still existed. I thought they went with the early 2000s.
I've still got an AOL email account.
That and gets spammed and hacked.
No, it doesn't. It's been hacked once in the 10 years I've had it.
And that was the time you lost your entire life savings.
No, that was a different thing.
I remember it got hacked and then you set up a new account.
Yeah, and I didn't care for it, so I went back.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh.
I've had it a long time. I like it. It's got something. It's not even ironic. I've just had it for a very long time.
Yeah, I shouldn't really, because I've had my Hotmail account for about 15 or 16 years.
I was going to say, you don't really get to, there's no higher ground there, is there?
Well, it's not Hotmail anymore, is it? It's Microsoft, whatever it is now.
I also think I'm old enough to not really give a flying fuck who my email provider is. I don't get that it's like there can be naff ones and good ones.
Cause do you mean old enough, or do you mean just sensible enough?
I don't know. At the end of the day, like, I don't pay for it. My email gets delivered. I read it. I reply. It's done. It's fine. I don't care what my...
You don't hear about them anymore. I remember AOL being everywhere in the late 90s. We used to get discs through the door for AOL.
We would get which had the internet on them.
Yeah. They'd send you the internet. That's how much they wanted you.
Well, it's a very American thing.
We may have strayed off the point.
No, of course not.
Yeah,
but
I think you might have.
Yes. So the Comets Alliance is finishing.
And I didn't realise. Well, I mean, to be honest, I don't read a lot of comic journalism because it maddens me. But I do read David Brothers a lot, both on his blog and when he links to stuff, because I like when he talks about comics. And I know that's where this impacts on me the most, because I don't think I'd even registered that his style of writing was what happened at Comics Alliance, if that makes sense. I didn't make the connection, but that's a shame, because that's a real shame, because if that's the case, and if there are other writers like him there, and I think there are, it's a place that kind of allowed for quite intelligent discussion of comics and a slightly deeper cultural look at them as well. So.
Yeah, I'm not one for comic news website, although Comics Alliance, when I first got into comics, was the first one I actually read when I was looking at them. And I didn't read very many, and it was my preferred, but a lot of people are quite sad to see it
People are really sad to see it. So that's bad news. I think the thing that I wasn't really conscious of until today as well, though, is not so much that it's going, but that it's one of not that many intelligent paying markets for writers who want to write about comics. So I'm not sure how it works with others, but I know that there are a few people who aren't going to be able to get paid to write smart stuff about comics, which is a shame.
It is.
So sorry about that.
But it's not your fault, Nick. I don't think you've got anything to apologise
for. I don't think I supported them enough.
Well, what are you going to do?
I don't know.
The horse has already bolted.
Yeah, it's too late.
I could have clicked on more of their advertiser links.
You could have. Does that even how it works now? I was quite disappointed this week that I was quite worried that I scratched by my ear and noticed that it smelt vaguely of Marmite.
I remember that.
And no one was prepared to talk to me about strange body odours that they have for no apparent reason.
I wash
a freaking day.
I am not a doctor, so yeah. I wouldn't have been able to comment on that. I would have felt uncomfortable with it. But, as it turns out, I do know someone who works on embarrassing bodies, so maybe I can get you some preferential treatment with one of their doctors.
Oh, I definitely want to go and appear on that, because that'll make me feel fucking shitloads better.
Well, it'll
about
just
myself.
Be the back of your ear.
Find my body embarrassing.
They can blur out your face.
They'd have to have a whole series of me, just me and my embarrassing body.
Well, maybe the trick there is then not to appear on Embarrassing Bodies. Maybe you could sell yourself to Channel 4. You could make loads of money off that, and it would basically be a doctor talking to you each week about a different part of
your body. I'm not sure that money would compensate me enough for me to be truly happy.
This week on James's Body, we handle his athlete's foot.
I haven't got athlete's foot. I've got very hard toenails, though.
Oh. Anything else happened this week?
Something's going to happen this week.
What's going to happen this week, Jane?
On Saturday,
What's going to happen on Saturday?
It's going to be Free Comic Book Day on the 4th of May.
May the 4th be with you. You hate Star Wars that much that you've stopped yourself halfway through saying May the 4th.
No, I recognise that's the American way of saying the date, and I am British. We say the 4th of May.
This is why she was so offended by your AOL account, America Online Boy.
Is that what it means?
What did you think it meant?
I thought it meant, oh.
Apples, oranges, lemons.
No, I thought it was a word. It was, oh.
Oh, lol, internet.
Oh, lol, 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 internet.
So.
No, it means anal online.
It does work anyway.
On Saturday, you can go to your local comic book store and pick up free comics. Get there early. And
that was going to be available at participating stores only, and I completely fucked that up.
But I think most of them are participating.
I bet he leaves that in.
Yeah, of course.
Probably. And if you're in Southampton, us, as in James, Nick, and I, the Mumcast, will be at our local Forbidden Planet in Southampton. So we'll be doing recordings throughout the day, and we'll be reading books and talking to people, and having fun and being nervous and shy. So if you're in the vicinity...
Who else is going to be there?
Yes, I'm getting into that part.
Oh, sorry.
So we have to take our recorders with us?
Yeah, we're going to play our recorders.
Shit. I haven't practised in ages.
I can do Three Blind Mice. Or a.k.a. Hot Cross Buns, because they're both the same.
I can do a Win the Saints.
So I can cover us. It's fine. You can just pretend...
I'll just hold it to my mouth
and
pretend to be blowing. That won't be the first time.
So yeah, we'll be recording throughout the day, and we'll be talking to people and being shy, and we'll have some guest stars there. David Wynn and Mike Giorgio will be there, and they'll be doing sketches and other amazing things, and timing themselves and holding their breath.
They'll be timing themselves. Yeah. That's another thing I do a lot.
Yeah, I think for one of them, it's not the first time they've done that either.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing how long they can hold their breaths and how many fruit pastels they can get in their ear. So it'll be...
She's gone all whimsical again. When did that happen? I can't keep up with you. It was depressing reality a minute ago. All of a sudden, you've gone into sort of like this weird whimsical reverie.
I think that's called...
Reverie's a good word.
I'm just... The barriers have come down. So it will be fun. You should come down and say hello to us and get lots of cool stuff.
I think I'm going to have some of my old UK comics that I'll probably just give away to people because I was going to chuck them otherwise. James doesn't want them.
I want the Star Wars ones.
Yeah, I haven't scanned everything out of those that I want yet, but there were Secret Wars and stuff like that I will have. It's a great series. I'll probably have some of those. I know David's got some stuff in the works. He will probably be talking to you about that on this show at some point. So let's say no more about it. Anything else happening this week? I think that's it, isn't it?
I think so.
Oh, and we're going to be having a barbecue.
That is
related to Comic Book Day.
I'm throwing a barbecue for most of the people that will be participating and some that aren't. And everyone needs to bring a jumper.
Yeah.
Because I've invited more people than will fit in my flat.
Yeah.
Big garden, little flat. It's going to be interesting.
It has to be said, am quite happy to take advantage of the fact that my wife is quite heavily pregnant, because that normally means we get somewhere to sit.
Oh, yeah.
That means your wife gets somewhere to sit.
Well, she will, yeah.
Well, no, but I have to stay close to her in case she needs tending to. So I'll at least be indoors.
But there'll
be
lots of people
important.
There that'll be happy to tend to your wife.
I'm sure, but they're not going to.
They're already planning to be splitters and stand indoors. See, this is what I knew this was going to happen. This is why I was so stressed out about it.
This isn't going to be some sort of a sex thing, is it? You've not become a sex person.
No, I've gone off it anyway, to be honest with you. I'm something about these pills. I tell you, these tablets I'm on combined my age. My libido, mate. I tell you, if anyone out there has seen my libido, If you could find it and just sort of try and gather it up, put it in a bag or something, wrap it in cling film.
It'll have to be a waterproof bag.
Yeah, and if you can post it to me, I'd be quite grateful to see it. be honest with you.
I think you're buying the pills from the wrong place.
It's a horrible, great slavering beast. You can't miss it.
You should shake it up so when James opens it up, it fizzes all over him.
I genuinely think it might be these pills.
You think?
Yeah.
That's nice.
We established in the week that statistically, there's a very good chance that one of the couples of people you know are swingers. And it's not me and my wife. So
I don't.
It's not either of you guys.
I don't think any of the people that we invited are swingers. Some people have what would be deemed by some as alternative lifestyles.
It's okay, James. It's not as if two swingers turn up to a party full of people who aren't swingers, suddenly it becomes a swinger party. I'm just saying.
I'll tell you who's coming. Keith Mom's coming, the mom we never talk about.
That's good, because he's always... I like talking to him.
Yeah, he's nice.
So when, like, say you walk the dogs on the park and you see a bunch of couples that you get to know, there's a very good chance at least one of those couples is our swingers.
Your fantasy life is weird.
Okay, it's not really a fantasy in most cases. No, I think it's fine. I just find it fascinating.
Well, it's a fantasy unless you've got like definitive proof that it's the case.
It isn't. No, it's a preoccupation. It's not really a fantasy.
It's a fantasy if you don't really know it's the case and you rush home and beat yourself off while thinking about it.
Well, but I don't know. I don't rush anywhere.
Okay. I wouldn't. Not if you're nursing an erection. You don't want to rush too far. What's it like the way I've gone? Because I can't remember.
Well, I don't know. I'm getting old.
Jane?
Oh, God.
It's David Wynne. He may or may not be cross.
Hello, monkeys. It's me again, David Wynne, drawer of Particle Fiction and co-drawer of Hypergirl with Ian Sharman. It's been a long time since I've sent in an audio contribution. I really should send one in sometime when I don't have something to plug, shouldn't I? I used to do that quite often. I kind of miss doing that. Enough berating of myself. I am sending in this contribution this week because of what I'm doing on Free Comic Book Day. Listeners should already know, or the listener, sorry, should already know that I will be present at the Forbidden Planet in Southampton on Saturday, sketching for money, because I am a money-grabbing whore. You should already know that because the monkeys have already spoken about it at length. What I don't know if they will have mentioned on this week's pod, but they certainly haven't mentioned previously because I only suggested it yesterday, is that I will be doing something for free, because I've been racking my brains of something I could do for free. I mean, obviously the ideal thing would be to give out a free comic, wouldn't it? But I don't have any comics I can give out for free, and I left thinking about it far too late to actually get a mini comic printed up. So what I come up with is there's this thing that I do on occasion at comic conventions and such of 3-minute sketches, a simple character head sketch, or sometimes head and shoulders. You know, obviously if you ask for Superman, then I need to get a little bit of his chest in there so you can see the Superman logo. But generally, it's just the face. And I normally charge like £1, maybe £2, depending on the day and my mood and how greedy I feel. But they are timed. They take 3 minutes. I do them against the clock. Which can get quite fun, you know. Sometimes, like, people will ask for quite complicated things, like the Predator or Alien, or the Predator, it's without his mask, or the Terminator with half his face missing, you know. Things like that can be quite a stretch. Sometimes people ask for a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, and they get a really heavily shaded turtle face, because those aren't complicated at all, you know. But so the plan with it this Saturday, sorry, I'm getting all discombobulated here. Let me see if I can bring this back on track. The plan for this Saturday is that I'm going to do 20 of these in a row for free. So hopefully from tomorrow, or so Friday, today when you're listening to this, hopefully, but certainly from Saturday morning, you should be able to, from Southampton, from Forbidden Planet in Southampton, get your name down, as long as you're one of the first 20 people to do this, get your name down for a free 3-minute head sketch. You choose character, you will be given a ticket. Then, at some point on Saturday afternoon, I will sit down at a table with a hat full of ticket stubs with character names on, and I will draw all 20 in a row. 1 hour, solid drawing, against the clock, 20 head sketches, without stopping. Should be a fun challenge, should be something interesting to watch if you're there. I hope it might be quite entertaining to see an artist torture himself in that manner. And then at the end, you'll be able to exchange your ticket stub for a sketch. That's it. That's the plan. Yeah. So do come along on Saturday, and get yourself a free head sketch, and maybe something a little more. Something that's taken a little more time, for, you know, quite a reasonable price. I generally charge a fiver for a single character A4 sketch. You know, I will also have original art for sale as well with me, like actual pages and pin-ups and stuff, which are all at different prices, but do come and have a look through my portfolio. I'll have some pages from projects I'm working on in there as well, which aren't for sale, but you know, you can come and have a look. Yeah, it should be fun. I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, I think that's everything. So see you Saturday. Bye bye. Oh, I forgot to say, go to particlefictioncomic.tumblr.com. My old Particle Fiction site is no longer there because Posterous has shut down. So it's particlefictioncomic, all one word, .tumblr.com. And you'll find the new home of Particle Fiction. You'll find lots of stuff there, actually. You'll find, not only will you find all of the issues of Particle Fiction, you'll also find both Twitter comics that I did with Momcast, and links to my various shops and so forth. So do please check that out. I'm actually working on a new 8-page Ideasman story at the moment that will go up there probably, or if it doesn't go up there, a link to where you can get it will go up there. So do check that out. All right. That's everything. Peace. Bye.
This week I'm going to talk about Beasts of Burden. It's a Beasts of Burden Animal Rights. It's a gigantic hardcover from Dark Horse. It's absolutely lovely. It says it's $19.99 on the back, but I believe from Amazon it was quite reasonably priced. So I'm going to skip right to the bit where I say you should definitely buy it. It's fucking awesome, and I'll tell you why it is in a minute. We'll probably put a link to it, actually, on the site. And one thing I sometimes mention but don't often mention, when we link to books on the website on the posts for these episodes, they are normally Amazon affiliate list links. I should put that all out on the table now. But if you buy stuff via one of those links, we do get a tiny little bit of money, which can go towards the hosting of these episodes. So it's all good. So anyway, Beasts of Burden Animal Rights, it's a hefty hardcover. It's written by Evan Dorkin of Milk and Cheese fame, with End Bill and Ted's, the Bill and Ted comics fame, I think.
Excellent.
With art by Jill Thompson, who is just amazing. She did Scary Godmother. She did some of the art in Invisibles, I think. And I think she might have done some Sandman stuff. But she's become known for this the watercolour style that she tended to use on Scary Godmother. It's got a real picture book quality to it, and it's absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous art, which is really what drew me to the Beasts of Burden stuff. What I thought I was going to be getting with this book was, a few months ago I talked about a Dark Horse one-shot.
Yes, which I also got, which had the Massive in it as well, didn't it?
It might have had a... Did it have a thing in the back? I'm not sure. It was specifically a Beasts of Burden.
Oh,
comic.
Sorry.
Yeah.
No, so, it had... there was... no, maybe it was... There was a preview. I remember there being a preview and the Massive was in there and the Beasts of Burden as well.
That's probably about right. Yeah, but this one was, it was like three short stories, three Beasts of Burden short stories, and I assumed they were going to be in this. They were collected from Dark Horse Presents from a while ago. So I assumed this book was going to be all of the Beasts of Burden stuff, because before that had come out, I hadn't heard anything about Beasts of Burden at all. I think it's one of those things that's been nestling away in anthologies, like Dark Horse anthology books and their anthology magazines, and so there's no reason I would have necessarily heard about it. But it's a complete gem, and it is amazing to me that there are quite so many Beasts of Burden stories to be had in this book. But yeah, so what this book is about is, what the series Beasts of Burden is about, is a group of, it's set in a place called Burden Hill, hence the Beasts of Burden, and it's about a group of dogs and one cat that live in this area. It's like a suburban American town, and all the things that happen to them, but they are paranormal investigators. It sort of says on the back they're paranormal investigators, and that makes it kind of sound like they're you know, they've got little coats and logos and stuff on them or something like that. They're part of an organization. It's not really like that.
I just
that.
Think the Fantastic Four when you say that.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like that, doesn't it? But no, what they are is they're just literally house, like family pets that are all mates with each other. And then in the first issue, the way this came about was, the writer Evan Dorkin was asked by a Dark Horse editor to write a story for one of their collections. I think it was the Big Book of Hauntings, or like a collection of horror shorts, and he came up with the idea of a haunted kennel, and then Jill Thompson got attached to it, and then this story kind of, this world became inhabited from there. So the first story is in this collection is that first story. It basically starts with a bunch of local dogs, family dogs, getting together to summon what they call the wise dog, who I think is like a big old English sheepdog who turns up.
Aww.
And
like Barney.
Yeah. And they are trying to talk. They are basically talking about how their little friend hasn't been able to sleep because they moved into the area. His owner's made him this lovely kennel, but he loves his owners and they're all fine, but he can't sleep because he keeps hearing noises in this kennel. And so it starts, the whole idea comes from these dogs trying to help each other, to trying to help one of their own. None of them really believe in ghosts at the time. They don't really have much of a mythology. They're basically just house pets. They talk about the black dog, who comes to take you away when you die.
Oh, wow.
They only talk about him euphemistically, very briefly. But other than that, like, one of them's this little pug, and he's like the Ben Grimm of the team. Or that he's kind of the cynical non-believer. He's the one who always makes snarky comments to the rest of them. So you've got the plucky young dog who is the one who's he's the really the heart kind of the heart the young heart of the group, who is the one who's being haunted at the beginning. Then you've kind of got, there's a Doberman in the group, there's and they've all got kind of really good dog names, like the pug is called Pugsley, one of them's Rex, one of them's Jack, the little dog's Jack, and they're all like, this group of dogs is really, they're really cool characters that complement each other. They're all different breeds as well, which is kind of cool. And so the supernatural element kind of gets introduced as this supernatural element coming into this suburban setting. But yeah, so this this world, supernatural incident by supernatural incident in each of these short stories sort of builds and gets bigger, and we go from having ghosts to there being a witch's coven in one story. There's a werewolf story in there. There's the undead. It does keep kind of coming back to this. So this world kind of expands a little bit, but at its core, there's still this group of normal dogs just trying to help each other out and help other animals out that are in trouble, that need help. Now, it's the thing about that is that it makes this a bit of a difficult book for me to read, because I'm the guy who still hasn't read the copy of Laika that James lent me a long time ago because it has a dog being abandoned in it at some point. And there's lots of that in here. You find out about the owners. Thankfully, there are hints that some of the humans are a bit oblivious. One of the dogs, I think it's the Doberman, does briefly mention that he doesn't have to worry about getting back to the house too soon because his owner's drunk again, so he doesn't even notice when he's not there. There are little things like that, but mainly it's dog. But mainly the moments that really got me are a lot darker than that. There's one story that starts out with them attending a burial. One of the things that the dogs do is with other dogs from the area as well, because there's this idea that there are like these little neighborhoods of dogs, and they get on okay with the other dogs, but they don't see them except for like special occasions. But so they actually perform a burial for some roadkill. There's this idea that these house dogs kind of look out for other animals that need it, sort of thing. I'm not convinced that real dogs are necessarily like that.
I think they think about food more than anything else.
And these dogs... I've been reading a lot of Proust recently.
But so there are lots of moments in it, especially in the first few stories, because there's a longer narrative later on. The first few stories are from collections, and then there's a 4-issue miniseries that's in here. And again, I think the 4-issue miniseries is made up of the 4-issue miniseries. Each issue is self-contained, but there are threads that run through them in a much more consistent way than the short stories. But there's it's all in here. There's a story about a Weimaraner who comes to them looking for help, finding her two pups, which is just horrible and evocative and sad and lovely and all those things at once. And there are moments, the things that surprised me were the moments of pure horror in this. Jill Thompson's art, Evan Dawkins' writing is great in this. The characterization of all of the animals is perfect. Yeah. They don't talk too clever, but they don't talk dumb either. They're not like Grant Morrison's dogs in animals in We Three, for example. So they're quite fully formed characters. But the thing, and Jill Thompson's art has that storybook quality to it, where everything is so pretty and beautiful, and the animals all look like real animals but also look like characters. There are some amazing pictures of the cat in here. The cat's called Orphan. He's basically a stray that like plods around between them all. And they all have very distinct personalities. But what surprised me is that the world these dogs live in, alongside being quite protected, is also quite violent as well. And I guess James can probably relate to this more. Well, I don't know. I don't know if our dogs are necessarily this bad, but all it really takes is to see them around. You end up seeing carcasses a surprising amount of the time when you own dogs.
I was talking to some dog owners only the other day and reminiscing about the time that one of my dogs ran up to me with a muntjac deer's leg in her mouth.
Oh, God.
No muntjac deer attached, just a leg.
That's awful. And this is the thing. The thing about this book that's really interesting is that it seems very whimsical, but when there's horror in it, it's really horrible. And Jill Thompson's art is so good, but so vibrant at capturing those moments of horror and gore. There's gore in this as well, that it really catches you by surprise. There's a bit where one of the a dog turns up, and the dog is in shock. It's a dog that they know. It's in shock, and it's carrying it's dragging behind it its owner's arm, which is still attached by the lead.
Oh my gosh!
Because it's just survived an attack on its owner. And it's really graphic and horrible. And it is. It's quite horrible. The mythology in it is really strong, but it's got such a big heart, this comic. It's amazing. And I thought it'd be easy for me to read it today because I assumed that the three stories that I already had in my other book would be in this book, but they're not. They're like three whole other ones. So it's a really full, rich and heavy value for money read. I loved it. Absolutely love it.
Aww.
I mean, it's difficult to say too much about it without talking about each story in turn, but it's really worth buying. It comes with my highest recommendation.
Then it must be worth buying.
Yes, thank you, Jane.
Thank you, Nick.
That's that, I think. What are you guys doing this week?
Quite hard to see past free comic book day to be honest with the stuff we're doing there.
I've got in-laws coming on Sunday, so it's going to be a very full. This back half of the week has been crazy for me. Three podcasts. This is the second of three podcasts for me, which is kind of crazy.
You only have to edit one of them.
Two of them.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's all very exciting, though. I like it. I don't know if anyone's really interested who hasn't already read it, but I am back on Elephant Words at the moment. I wasn't planning to be back on Elephant Words.
Oh, I read it today. It's terrifyingly autobiographical.
It wasn't autobiographical.
Yeah, maybe not a much.
You were reading Womp.
Eh?
I said James was reading Womp.
What's Womp?
You know what Womp is.
Oh, I've heard about Womp. You've talked about Womp before, haven't you? But I've never read Womp.
No, I was definitely reading Elephant Words. You should read it. It's terrifying and it's completely, fully autobiographical.
It's funny you say that because the way it was written, I did some technically stuff with it. And the way it was written was designed to be almost the opposite of autobiographical. But you obviously didn't get that feeling from it. Maybe you're too close to the author.
Far too far. Because I there's certain events in the real world that have clearly inspired you to write it. So, it's...
But anyway, so well worth going and having a look at Elephant Words. There are five other writers there who are also really good. I wasn't planning on being on it at all this run. I'm trying to take a break from it. But but yes, it's fun. It's exciting. So I'll be doing another one of those next week. So we barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
Free comics day.
Yeah.
What are you guys... So you don't, generally don't know what's happening next week?
In-laws on Sunday,
you
I
as
think.
Well?
Yeah, and then Monday, I don't know what I'm doing. Hopefully it'll be sunny and I'll be out in the garden.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, it's a bank holiday.
Looking for my libido.
How exciting. I don't think your libido is just going to be in your back garden.
Could be in the shed, couldn't it? It's quite a big workshop.
It is a man shed, isn't it?
Mm.
And it would be the last place you look as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the squirrels has got it and lived down the bottom of our garden.
Yeah. No, because your libido would explode a squirrel. I've seen it happen.
Actually, with all the pigeons in your garden doing what they've been doing, I reckon the pigeons have got hold of it.
Yeah, you're not far wrong. They are dirty bastards.
Mm-hmm. Jane, what do you think is going to be happening to you from Sunday?
From Sunday, I'll be doing more eBay stuff.
That we're not allowed to look at.
See the link on the show notes.
Or promote to people.
But I'm just like...
Link in the show notes.
Yeah, okay. And then I don't know what's going to happen. Probably more Lost. If the weather's nice, a stroll around the common.
Mm.
And eating some ice cream. I've just invented that.
I've heard of ice cream.
If you add self-raising flour to ice cream and then cook it in an oven, it comes out as ice cream bread.
I find that implausible.
I'm going to be trying it.
Find it implausible.
But I'm going to be trying it at some point.
Where did you hear this?
Somebody wrote an article about it that I read on the internet.
Right.
And then, yeah, I'm just going to relax and have a nice weekend.
Sounds good. I think I actually, as much as I love my in-laws and Free Comic Book Day, I'm kind of looking forward to that point on Monday when I can just sit down. I think that's us then.
Yeah.
Thank you, listener. You are awesome, as always. Thank you, contributors. You're always awesome too. Thank you, James and Jane.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
And we are out of here.
Yep.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Done talking. Oh, there is no more talking to be had.
That's going
to
make a fucking podcast a real chore. So how do you feel in your heart?
Sad.
James is picking up louder on your mic than you are. That's
how does it
weird.
Feel to be in love?
Good.
Okay, there you go. Tell me about being in love. How does it make you feel?
It feels good.
Good. How do these emotions, this feeling of goodness, how does it manifest itself?
What?
How does it manifest itself? I feel good. What feels good? Means you get a tingling in your clack-a-lack-a-dack-dack, or do you just feel happy to be alive, or do you just feel less suicidal?
I've gone back to sad again.
Oh, fuck. You made me sad. Are you going to storm off to your bedroom?
So what were those organ riffs, James?
And